Let's go now, though, to the battle being waged by the Australian Federal Police against modern-day slave traders. Most of their focus is on sex trafficking. But the AFP says the trafficking of people into slave labour in other industries is an alarming and growing trend. These industries include the construction, agriculture, fishing and manufacturing sectors. And often the only people these workers know in Australia is the person who's exploiting them. The AFP says it needs more intelligence to tackle the problem. Mike Woods reports.
While the sex industry is where most trafficked victims end up, the AFP says it believes there's a growing trend of people being put to work under slave-like conditions in a number of other areas. AFP Commander Chris McDevitt.
We don't know enough about it. We simply don't have enough intelligence from the community at the moment. AFP have actually undertaken 320 investigations or assessments since 2003-04, and out of those we've identified 187 victims. 167 of those are women, and out of those 167 women, 151 were trafficked into the sex industry, and 16 were trafficked in, for exploitation into other industries. And we've also had 20 men who have been trafficked for exploitation in non-sex industries.
Fiona David is a lawyer and criminologist who, with her team from the Australian Institute of Criminology, has been researching labour trafficking in Australia. She says as authorities get better at identifying labour trafficking in other sectors, they may find that the number of people being exploited is greater than in the sex industry.
In Australia, we've seen labour trafficking situations involving domestic workers. So, for example, a family might bring out a domestic worker from another country to work in Australia as effectively as unpaid slave labour around their house. We've also seen situations in the construction industry where, again, people are recruited through very deceptive means to come to Australia and work in what is described as a forced labour or slavery type situation. Labour trafficking tends to take place in any industry that has elements of, you know, being part of the informal economy. So that could be construction, it could be agriculture. In some countries and some contexts, it even includes fishing or manufacturing.
Fiona David says while some people are recruited in their home countries by professional traffickers, many are actually sponsored by family and friends who are already living in Australia with the promise of a better job and a better life. She says they're often forced to be on call to work 24 hours a day and paid very meagre wages or none at all. Many ask why the labour trafficking victims simply don't escape the drudgery and walk away. Fiona David again.
The situation often makes me think of a domestic violence situation. Why didn't somebody just walk out the door? Why did they put up with this situation? I think we have to understand the context that people are coming from and the situations that they find themselves in. So, for example, in a recent case involving a domestic worker in Queensland, that young woman had been brought literally from the slums of Manila. She had been living in a house in Manila with no running water, no electricity. In Australia, she had access to a telephone. But when they asked her in court, why didn't you call somebody? The only person in the world that she knew who had a telephone was her aunt who had helped get her into this situation in the first place. So we're talking about people who are incredibly socially isolated, coming from a very different background, and the only people they often know in Australia are the very people who are exploiting them.
Fiona David says in one Australian labour trafficking case, a victim did try to escape but was easily found again by traffickers. She says in this case, an Australian couple, Melita and Zoltan Kovacs, acted independently to recruit slave labour from Asia.
They decided to recruit themselves a domestic worker. So Mr. Kovacs went off with his friend to the Philippines, found a woman to marry, promised her that she could come back and work as a domestic worker and that she would be paid. So through a long series of circumstances, this young woman came back to Australia as a spouse of another man, but once she arrived here, she was then sexually assaulted by Mr. Kovacs and put to work both in his home and in his shop as effectively unpaid slave labour. The young woman was in this situation for an extended period of time and she did try to escape. She did try to literally walk out the door, but of course she was in Weipa. So when Mr. and Mrs. Kovacs realised she'd left, they literally got in their car and drove around the streets until they found her, which was very easy for them to do.
The AFP's Commander Chris McDevitt says, like the victims of sex trafficking, those trafficked to work in other industries face a varying range of devices used by traffickers to keep them in servitude.
You know, they might be subject to physical violence, or they might be under a debt bondage situation where they have to pay an unreasonable amount for being recruited or transported out here, and then that might build up, so they have to buy food and that from the trafficker. Their consent to live in a particular area has been removed. There's use of force or threat to keep them in their location. The use of force or threats to actually provide the labour or the services. They're not free to leave. They don't have a choice. There's no, it's not voluntary. That's the issues that we've got. There's also, you know, the identity documents might be withheld, and restrictions of freedom of movement, those type of things that you would typically associate with slavery type conditions.
So how can law enforcement, immigration officials, or even members of the public identify labour trafficking victims? Criminologist Fiona David says it's a very difficult ask, particularly as most victims are reluctant to reveal their status.
Victims of trafficking may be very distrusting of authority. They may be very unwilling to initially tell a complete stranger what has happened to them. So what we see is that very often these cases are identified by either an immigration official who's gone in a compliance situation and has spent some time talking with that person. They pick up that there's something not right, they get some indications of trafficking, and then they'll refer that to the Australian Federal Police. The other situation that happens is that people come into contact with a community service provider, whether it's a domestic violence service provider or a sexual assault service, and they develop a relationship over time with somebody they trust. Over time, they begin to tell the full story of what happened to them. So these cases aren't obvious. It's not like opening the door and you see a pile of drugs. These cases are about giving people time and space to open up and tell what's happened to them.
And recognising the signs, that's criminologist Fiona David ending that report from Mike Woods. And the Federal Police are currently conducting a series of forums around the country to better equip our state and federal police to identify both traffickers and victims.